Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Bring it again. Back goes McSorley. Retreats, rolls right. Delivers downfield. Goblin got him at the USC 45, and Jackson takes him down there. First down, Penn State. What a play that time by McSorley. Barkley will be to the right of McSorley on third and six, USC 24. McSorley takes the snap. Barkley shoots up the middle, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Penn State. Saquon Barkley from 24 yards out, and the Nittany Lions are on the board. They load up the box. Back goes McSorley. Back, steps away from pressure, long and deep downfield. Goblin reaches up, makes the catch at the 50, breaks the tackle, 45. Inside the 45 and down to the USC 42-yard line. McSorley waits. He blitz from the outside, rolls to his right, gets away from Enwaso, throws downfield for Goblin in the end zone, reaches up. He's got it! Touchdown, Penn State!
I'll tell you, Trace McSorley keeps us alive, and Godwin keeps it alive as well.
Sorley waits, takes the snap, they rush for. Back, delivers over the middle. Godwin makes the catch with one hand at the 25-29-yard line, and a first down for Penn State. What a catch!
That's an unbelievable catch.
Far hash, they show four up front. Second down and nine. It's going to be McSorley. Play action in the end zone. Gesicki reaches up. He's got it. Touchdown, Penn State. It's going to be Barkley. First carry. Tries to bounce to the outside. Turns upfield 20, 25. Cuts inside 30, 35. Barkley to the 40. To the center of the field, 45, 50. Swings to the far side, 40, 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Penn State. Saquon Barkley, 79 yards. And the Nittany Lions are an extra point away from the lead. Sorley now on first and 10, their own 28. Takes the snap, play action fake, steps away, long and deep, far sideline for Goblin, reaches up, makes the catch at the 30, 20, 15, 10, 5, touchdown, Penn State, 72 yards. Jackson got a hand on it. It went in the air, reeled in by Goblin. He takes it to the house, and the Nittany Lions on a roll. Darnold to the line, backs up. McNamara tight to the near side. Four-man front. Bell wants to blitz and does. Back goes Darnold. Quick shot, far side. Knocked away, intercepted. Taken away by Bell. 20, 15. Bell to the 10. Bell to the 5. Far corner and down at the 3-yard line. Penn State jumped at that time, and Haley knocked it in the air. Barkley will stay to the left of McSorley. Far side as we see it. McSorley takes it. Rolls left. He's going to keep it himself. Turns upfield. Touchdown, Penn State. First and goal at the USC 7. McSorley rolling near side. Looks in the end zone. Fires. He's got Barkley. Touchdown. Penn State. The Nittany Lions cap an 82-yard drive.
This is so well designed. Great job by Joe Moorhead.
So here we go. Back out onto the field. Far hash. Angle to his right. 46-yard attempt for the left-footed Matt Bormeister. So he's going to have to hook it here. Now they settle in. Both his misses have been beyond 40. To win the Rose Bowl. On its way. The kick is up and the kick is gone. And Matt Bormeister wins the Rose Bowl for USC 52-49.
I didn't want to call that last one, just so you know. I did not want to call the last one. But there's a lot to talk about with this team. We're going to have Frank Bodani on the show today. All right, York Daily Record with some reflection. Brendan Quinn is going to join us today. We're going to talk about tonight's basketball game, but also a little bit about Michigan football, too, and the scope of the Big Ten. We're going to talk to him as well today. This is what is great about this year is that we are now talking about what Penn State is, and we're talking about what Penn State can be and will be in the future. That is what we are doing now. Penn State is a great, storied, outstanding tradition and legacy. This season added to that legacy. But instead of always living in the past, everyone can now talk about the present and do so with great pride. And everyone can also talk about the what the future is and how bright they feel the future is. Okay? And that's what is so important about it. And that's what I think is the exciting part of what this is. This team has brought everyone now into the fold about what Penn State is, the remarkable run. You know, people are disappointed that Penn State lost the Rose Bowl. Words that you would not have heard in August and September. Words that you would not have heard a year ago. I'm disappointed they lost the Rose Bowl. Now people are talking about that they're disappointed that they lost the Rose Bowl. The players are, and the coaches are justifiably disappointed because guess what? They knew it was a game they could win because they're just as good as USC. It's a 50-50 game. That's what you want to get into. Penn State's just as good as anybody now. And that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of it. And now it's going to be a question of, you know, there are two major tests of character. And I've talked about this often. Two major tests of character in life. Okay? And the two major tests are, how do you handle working with the suit? No, I'm just kidding. The two major tests of character in life are, how do you react in life when you're at the lowest of lows? How do you react? Do you keep your backbone? Do you keep your spirit going? Do you dig in and work harder? Do you do everything in your power to correct it? Are you the kind of person people want to be around? Are you as a woe is me, kind of drag everybody down with you kind of person that just can't fight their way out of it? Okay? And that's what you strive for in this. And I thought the way Penn State has handled, I'm talking about the football program, the way they handled it with a positive attitude, a can-do attitude, the way the fans handled it with a positive can-do attitude. I mean, I'm talking about coaches, players, and fans here. How they handled it. All right? Now, here comes the next step. This is a wonderful thing to then talk about. The other test of character. How do you handle things on the highest of highs? Do you stick to the routine? Do you stick to the positives that got you here? And, you know, in other words, okay? Ignore the noise. The world is going to tell you how great you are. You're great. You're fabulous. You're incredible. Right? And if you ignore it, your chances of making the next step forward are remarkable. Now, the external noise is great for recognition, recruiting. You're perceived as one of the top programs on the rise. Every, you know, people love to be a part of something like that. All right. That part's great. You know, you want to, you know, you want to fight for a national championship. You get yourself in a position to do it. You then, you know, recruiting wise, I'm not talking about the first Wednesday of 17. I'm talking about the first Wednesday in February of 17. I'm talking about 18, 19. People want to be a part of something they think is special, on the rise, on the go. And that's what all of this has done, all that positive noise about Penn State. Now, internally, moving forward, for the current football team, do they take that game on Monday and say, you know what, we're never going to let that happen again? All right? That's never going to happen again. I'll give a little history lesson about that in a moment. Okay? I'm going to give you a history lesson about that in a moment that I think fits this situation. And I'll come back and we'll talk about that in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. Great to have you with us here on the show, and Happy New Year to all of you. We will actually do the show in the confines of the Sunbury Motors studio tomorrow, and we'll do Friday's show from Philadelphia. I feel like I'm in the witness protection program. All right, promised a history lesson. You know, it's a different time, different era, different media, no Twitter, no internet. Al Gore hadn't decided yet to make up his story. And Al Gore, the originator of fake news. But it's a different era in 1985. But remember this. 1984, Penn State is 6-5. That's the season. Penn State actually was 6-3 at one point. They played Doug Flutie in Boston College about a month before Flutie wins the Heisman Trophy. Flutie throws for, I think, like 484 yards, some number. But Penn State wins the game, 38-31. And in that game, Penn State plays brilliantly. Now they go to Notre Dame. They're full of confidence. They're doing great. Looks like they had a really nice bowl bid out of it. Fiesta Bowl's talking to them. They go into Notre Dame. Steve Berline and company blow them out 44-7. I mean, blow them out. And then Penn State plays Pitt at home to wrap up the season, and Pitt beats them 32-11 or something like that. And that was the one where Joe said, referred to his team as a bunch of babies. Did we play like a bunch of babies? And I know exactly the person he said that to on the air. Oh, that would have been me as the third announcer on the network. My job, one of them, was to do the post-game show with Joe on the network. Penn State has a chance at a Cherry Bowl bid. Turns him down. Turns it down. No bowl. Okay. So now Penn State goes into 1985 under the radar, no expectations, because they're coming off a 6-5 year, and everybody's like, well, I don't know. And Penn State starts out the season, win a close game, win another close game, win another close game. I remember one in particular. They played East Carolina. They won 17-10. They won a bunch of games like that. And slowly but surely, they start building some wins. And all of a sudden, they play Alabama at home and put together a brilliant performance against Alabama. And Penn State was down in the game, I want to say 12-10 or something like that. Something like that, 12-10. And they start from their own 20, and Joe runs a reverse. And Joe called the reverse. Joe's the one who called the reverse. And to Michael Timpson, and he takes it out to midfield, a 30-yard play. Now the stadium gets rocking. They're going, wow. And they drive down to, I don't know, about the 25 or whatever. And John Schaefer gets hit by the Alabama front and gets hurt. So John then has to leave the game, and Matt Kisner comes into the game. And Joe tells Fran Ganner, he says, look, he says, he can move. Roll him and throw him. Okay. So they call. This is the first snap that Kisner takes in the game. Takes the snap, rolls right, hits Brian Seiberling, touchdown. Penn State wins the game. I think Penn State was winning 12-10. Penn State won the game 19-10. Signature win. Then they play Notre Dame in a driving rainstorm. Massimo Manca kicks four field goals, including a 50-yarder in a driving rainstorm. Penn State wins the game 36-6. They shut out Pitt at Pitt 31-0. Then they play Oklahoma for the national championship. Unexpected in the Orange Bowl. First drive, Penn State goes down, scores. Tim Manoah scored in a run. After that, they got a field goal the rest of the game. John Schaefer struggled. Matt Kisner replaced him. And Jamel Holloway hit this touchdown pass to Keith Jackson on a 3rd and 26. That was the signature play of the game. Oklahoma wins the title 25-10. Every player on that team in 86, and they had, you know, Shane, led by Shane Collins. Shane Collins, first team All-American. He could have gone to the NFL. Could have gone. Every single guy that was in that, I played 4 years, I've been here 4 years, I have a fifth year coming to me. They all could have gone to the NFL. And to a man, led by Conlon, led by Bob White, all said, no, we're coming back. We don't want to have what happened in the Orange Bowl leave that sour taste. We're going to finish this job. Every one of them said that. Conlon, White, all of them. Graham, all of them. Okay? And they all came back. And then, of course, we know what they did in 86. And they finished it off with Miami. And they just shut everything out around them and were determined that that was the place they were going to be the next year, and they're going to finish the job. This team is very much in the same position. Same kind of strong leadership with a head coach. Same kind of strong staff around them. Same kind of growing program that went from a 7-6 and people wondering what was going on to them putting together a magical 11-3 with a heartbreak in the Rose Bowl, but now with a chance to accomplish something bigger and better. I see the parallels between the two. Brendan Quinn, next half hour, we'll talk basketball, Michigan football, then Frank Bodani at 4:06 to talk about Penn State football. We're in Ann Arbor, where the snow is flying today. No longer in southern sunny Southern California any longer. We left that behind us. Sunbury Motor Studio. Great to have you with us.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 at Hummel's Wharf. Brendan Quinn and Blue.com in just a few moments. But first, this day in sports history. 1957, the Dodgers bought a 44-passenger twin-engine airplane for $775,000. They were the first team to own their own plane. 1974, NBC presented hockey in prime time. The Bruins and the Rangers were the teams on the NHL Game of the Week. 1976, the Cowboys became the first wild card team to make the Super Bowl. They beat the Rams 37-7 in the NFC title game. Now, that's sore. That's while being completely accurate, okay, the Kansas City Chiefs were the first non-division winner to make it in. They actually finished second to the Raiders in the AFL West, the first year the AFL ever went to extra playoff teams, but that's whatever. Let's see, 1982, Brian Gumbel moved from the NBC Sports anchor desk to the anchor desk of today with Jane Pauley. 1983, the USFL held its first player draft. Don Shula, 1996, announced his retirement from the Dolphins after 26 years. I want to say 346 career wins, something like that. And in 1999, former pro wrestler Jesse the Body Ventura sworn in as Minnesota's 37th governor. How did it go? All right, let's bring in Brendan Quinn from MLive.com. Brendan, welcome. It's always great to hear you on the other end.
I'm wonderful. How are you, sir?
Doing great. Where are we going tonight?
Knights in downtown Ann Arbor. It's a new version of an old haunt. So it's a great spot. You get a steak, get some pork chops, get some pasta, get whatever you want. I know Girardi's a picky eater. You know, he's a bit of a prima donna. So hopefully it's a robust enough menu for his liking.
Well, you're right. He is somewhat of a picky eater. Tarman won't have anything with mushrooms, right? And he's not big on romaine lettuce. So, I mean, I hope this fits
I will call ahead and tell them to remove all mushrooms and romaine lettuce from the establishment.
Brendan, let's talk a little bit about I want to start with Michigan basketball. They're 10-4 right now. It looks to me like John's got it down to really his base 7 or 8 guys. Would that be fair?
Yeah, and he would have preferred it to have been 8 or 9, but that the bottom of the roster spots have not really kind of fleshed out, frankly. You know, he wanted more out of his freshmen. One guy's redshirting, but the other three were supposed to be more in the mix than what they are. Xavier Simpson is a freshman point guard who he wanted to see as – he basically wanted to run a three-guard offense with only two guys at a time, but he wanted three to rotate through the two spots. And Xavier Simpson was supposed to be the third of that group and has not really taken shape. And then Ibby Watson was supposed to be more of a backup on the wing and is barely playing at this point. So, yeah, he's got a really tight rotation. Put it this way, they just played Iowa on Saturday or Sunday. I don't remember which one. But it went to overtime. They had 5 guys play 35 minutes or more. Iowa had no one play more than 34. And that's kind of what Michigan's rolling with right now. And it's not ideal, but that's what they got.
Let's talk a little bit about DJ Wilson because he's coming off a career game. He had 28 and he had 14 in that game. But he's actually been putting up some good numbers consistently, not just to that level. Where has the improvement happened for him, Brendan?
A lot of it, I think, is just kind of letting the game come to him a little bit more. He is very naturally talented. He's every bit of 6'11". Maybe he might be closer to 7 foot at this point. But he plays as a stretch four. He can shoot. He made 4 of 8 threes against Iowa. He's shooting, I think he's like 13 for 39 on the season or something like that. But he can stretch it. He can finish at the rim. He's given them a rebounding presence at the four position that they haven't had in a while. So, yeah, he's really finding his way. They kind of experimented with him at the center the last 2 years. He's a redshirt sophomore. He was injured as a freshman. But they kind of wanted him to be a center. That failed. He's a true four, and it's really working out well. He gives them a dimension that you're not used to seeing from Michigan, which has obviously always been very guard-heavy under Beilein, basically except for the NCAA tournament when Mitch Gary turned into Shaquille O'Neal.
Right, yeah, exactly. Duncan Robinson was a starter a year ago, and, of course, you know, everyone knows about the story of him being at Williams mm-hmm. and the connections that got him here. He's now a sixth man. Is that really more of a better role for him being a sixth man on this team where he can come in and maybe give John some instant offense?
Yeah, I mean, that would be that's in theory, yes. Sometimes he's a bit of a streaky shooter. Sometimes when he's so open, he's most likely to miss, if that makes sense.
I understand that. Now, some guys, when they get pressured, they snap it in a certain way, as opposed to being so open, they get casual, and then all of a sudden they miss it.
Yeah, like he's best with someone running at him coming off a screen, you know, where he's just catching the lights. He just finds his mark on the back of the rim, and he just lets it fly. Like that's, you know, right. I would imagine if you could even chart something like that, he's at like 60-something percent in his career. But if he gets his feet set a little bit too much and he kind of starts to aim it, Now it's dropping to like 30%. He's a really interesting player, but you know, he's 6'8". He's still not a guy who really goes to the rim or finishes, or he doesn't really rebound too much. He's a capable passer, but they can't put him into ball screen situations quite yet. So he's still pretty much a shooter, but at the same time, he can come off a bench and make three threes in 2 minutes and totally change a game on the dime.
Mo Wagner, what mm-hmm. has allowed him, especially in the second half of last season into this season, to develop?
Well, he's abundantly talented, would be number one. He's a guy, he's got that Euro game. He's about 7 feet. When he's not getting himself in trouble with a touch foul or just completely losing someone defensively, he is among the better big men in the entire league. Right now, I'd probably put it at, like, you know, Swanigan, Hap, Nick yeah. Ward, and I'd probably put Wagner right behind those three as of right
yeah,
now.
That makes sense.
He's as naturally gifted as anyone you'll see. He can play inside out more so than any of those guys other than Hap. He can handle the ball. He's great in screen and roll situations, which I think you'll see a lot of tonight. And, he's really, really good. And when he gets going, they really feed off of him very well.
The two veterans, though, are Irvin and Walton. Have they provided the veteran play and veteran leadership that John Beilein needs?
Well, I mean, leadership-wise, I think Zach Irvin has done so. I think Derek Walton's probably still a little bit too quiet, which is especially difficult because he is the point guard, whereas Zach is a wing. They've needed more from Walton all year. They've needed more from Walton the last 3 years. It just hasn't really happened yet. When he's good, he's pretty darn good. But it's, you don't know what you're getting from night to night. And that's kind of been all season. So everyone's kind of been waiting for, you know, the senior storyline to play out, especially for him, but basically for both of them, because they're kind of a package deal in that regard. But just really hasn't happened. Now there's 17 games left. A lot could happen, but you know, I kind of thought that if it was going to happen, it was going to happen in the beginning of the year. And I wrote a column on Monday morning that basically said Michigan's biggest conundrum right now is that its two best players are Wilson and Wagner, and
right.
the two players who they are counting on to lead them are Walton and Irvin. And that's a gap that is pretty difficult to close, and it's really going to be quite a job of coaching for John to figure out, I think, how to make this thing work.
You know, I mean, that's interesting you say that, because when I look at Penn State, you would say the veteran guys would be Shep Garner, Peyton Banks, and they've been yeah. a little bit up and down. Now, Garner's been sick, so, I mean, that's a big part of what's happened with Garner. He's missed mm-hmm. his last 9 threes, but he was so sick, you know, and they need them to both be up there. There are nights where, like, Josh Reeves has been their best player. Mike Watkins has been their best player. So it sounds like Pat and John are going through some of the same things.
Yeah, I mean, I've always thought of Shep as being one of the better unknown players in the league when you get you
yeah.
know, when you talk about dealing with other fan bases and stuff like that, or even other reporters in the league. They're, you know, he just isn't known. You know, they rarely play outside of BTN and stuff like that, and people just don't watch them that much. But
right.
you know, Garner, in my mind, has always been the next one in line. From just, you know, that Penn State has kind of always had this baton of guards. There's a baton that guy's gone from guard to guard to guard. From your Tim Frazier's and whatnot. I don't need to rattle them all off. But he, in my mind, has always been the next one. And I haven't seen them enough this year to know what's going on with him, other than just kind of knowing that he's been a little under the weather and stuff. But, I was expecting this to be his team this year. He's a junior, right?
He's the oldest guy they have.
Yeah, so, you know, he can – at least he has another year that I think
right. –
I would imagine over there the theory has always been they got to get to this year, figure out what they are, and then go run next year.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's what we're watching. And I know Dick and I will talk to you a little bit about that tonight, about where they are. But I want to get to a couple of football things. What is the feeling around here? Michigan football rolled for such a long time, but then they lost 3 of 4. Then they lost all 3 to very, very good football teams. But what's the feeling right now about where they are as a program, especially after how the season closed and the bowl game closed?
I think it's kind of a mixture of trying to dilute what their expectations were, balanced with profound sadness and disappointment, would be the sentiment here. Since they finished the season with 3 losses in 4 games, you had some people turn around and say, well, maybe they weren't as good as we thought, and these were Brady's hoax players, and wait until Harbaugh gets his guys in, and, you know, we shouldn't have been predicting them to win 11 games or 12 games. But that's a bunch of nonsense. There are an insane amount of NFL players on this team. That defense was so loaded with senior talent that it's not replicable. And we were saying at midseason, Nick Baumgartner, who covers the team, and I on our podcast, was if they don't do it this year, and I'm not saying win the national championship, but, you know, go win a Big Ten title or go make a playoff or do something, it's going to be – they're going to have to reset things. And, you know, this was year – or next year is year 3 for Harbaugh. And Saban won a national title in year 3, and Urban won a title in year 3. And they're not going to win a national championship next year. They will be taking a step back next year. They play at Penn State. They play at Wisconsin. They can't beat – you and me have a better chance of beating Ohio State right now than they do. They just can't beat that team. And so right now they're trending as like a 3 or 4 loss team next year. And that's kind of been the tough pill to swallow. That's in the back of everyone's mind here. And, you know, they're really upset that that this year did not go the way it was. And they were – I mean, they were 5 points away from having a completely different season, because I think they were better – I think they were better than Ohio State.
You watch that game play out, because Jack and I were watching the game in the booth, and Michigan was the better team, but Michigan made the big mistakes. Ohio State didn't make the big mistakes.
Correct. You know, this wasn't the year for them to play at Ohio State, that's for sure. They needed them at home this year, and they didn't get it, and... Yeah, I'm not sure where they go from here. They keep saying they got all these recruiting classes. I know less than nothing about that, but
all I know is
when you look at the rankings, Alabama's still ahead of them, Ohio State's still ahead of them. So how are you closing that gap? That is a very complicated question that people are trying to swallow here.
Anybody out early for Michigan, and anybody on the fence that might go out early?
Everyone's assuming Peppers goes. Okay. Mo Hurst already announced he's back. Jake Butt is kind of up in the air right now. He's gone.
He's seen.
I think that might be it. They had Mason Cole, I think, was a question mark, and I believe he's coming back. Khalid Hill was a question mark, and he's coming back.
Yeah, he said he
but,
was.
You know, it's not early entries as much as it's all the seniors on the
team.
They had like 8 senior starters or something ridiculous, including Jordan Lewis and Taco Charlton and Chris Wormley, just beasts all over the place. And they're gone, and they're being not only being replaced by young guys, they're being replaced by like redshirt freshmen and stuff. So it's going to be tough.
One final question. I'll shift back to basketball for you. There have been some early surprises in this conference so far. How balanced, in your opinion, is the Big Ten, Brendan?
Well, the question that I have right now is it good balance or bad balance?
That's a very good question.
I can't really tell, because, you know, on one hand, I thought Indiana was the closest thing, you know, watching teams through the preseason, I thought Indiana was the closest thing that, when it was put together, looked like a Final Four team. And I kind of just brushed aside that loss to Fort Wayne, you know, and said, whatever, it's a goofy game and they're on the road, whatever, weirder things have happened. But you lose to Nebraska at home.
Yeah, and Nebraska beat them. That was not a fluke. Nebraska beat them.
Right, and their point guard play is, I think, way worse than anyone thought it would be.
Agreed.
The turnovers are really bad. James Blackman, for as good as he was in the beginning of the year, is every bit the enigma, I think, that people kind of thought he was. I don't know what to make of Indiana. But then you see Wisconsin last night, and they're just old and balanced and really good, and they know how to play ball. They are, I think, you know, they were the preseason favorite for a reason. But in terms of the balance of the league, I'm starting to think it's not that great of a league. And I go back to when I was making my preseason all-league team and said, there's like 20 guys that could be on it, and it's because there's not 20 great players.
Right.
You know, it's because
I was the same way. Do you vote in the preseason thing? Yeah, I do too. Yeah. And I looked at the 10, because I think we had to vote for 10, right? Mm-hmm. Something like that. And I remember voting for the 10, and I was the same as you. I was like, there was no guy that jumped out to me as like, that is the guy.
Right.
It was just a, you know, and I kind of feel the way that this league, to me, spots 5 through 9 are wide, wide open in this league. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, well, and right now I'd say it's one
maybe
is alone.
Maybe 4 through 9 is.
Yeah, I'd say one is alone right now.
Yep.
And then it's like a kind of a pack there from 2 to 4. And then just it's a crapshoot from there on. I have no idea.
Because
you look at Northwestern, and one minute they look like this is the year, and then the next minute they look completely lost. But they got a lot of nice pieces. And basically, if Northwestern doesn't make it this year, they're never making it, ever.
Yeah.
Because the league is so average, and they're good enough to go win 11 games, that if they don't make it this year, I'm convinced it's never happening, and they should just shut the program down.
I don't think that's all those comments. Always a pleasure, my friend. Look forward to dinner tonight. Mr. Girardi should be here shortly, and we are ready. And just make sure that all the Girardi food particulars are sent ahead to the restaurant so they know what to do.
All have been accounted for. We have the finest table. We are good to go.
You are the man. Hey,
right.
Thanks. Hey, Brent, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Can't wait to see you, man.
All right, Brendan Quinn joining us from MLive.com. We're an hour away from obviously going through all the Girardi and Tarman food choices before the game tonight, which is at 8:30, 8 o'clock the airtime. Back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.